Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 395 of The Law Entrepreneur. Five more to go until 400. I'm Neil Tyra, your host once again. And today my guest is Jason Rice. Jason is a solo practitioner up in the beautiful state of Maine, having left the sunshine state of Florida to pursue his legal practice near his wife's hometown, as a matter of fact. And he has a family law practice there, and he's very kind to have suggested to me that one of the inspirations for him going solo and one of the planning tools he used in preparation to go solo was listening to this podcast. And so that's very gratifying for me to hear, and it kind of, you know, justifies to a degree what we do here on the podcast. So I'm thrilled to have him on and to talk about his journey. And as you will see, it's one that I think many of us can relate to and find inspiration in. So without any further delay, here is Jason Rice. Jason Rice, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you for having me, Neil.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you with us today, Jason. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, so I'm a solo practitioner. At the moment, I opened up my own law firm, Dorigo Divorce, beginning of June of this year. I've been practicing for approximately 14 years. I'm practicing currently in Springvale, Maine, so outskirts of Portland and kind of on the border of New Hampshire, so near Portsmouth Seacoast area. Been up here for 4.5 years. Prior to that, my wife and I, we lived in Tampa since 2005. That's where we met in college. That's where I went to law school at Stetson University College of Law. I, coming out of law school, was a staff attorney at the 13th Judicial Circuit in Tampa, assigned to some of the criminal divisions, then some family law divisions, and then was there for about 3-4 years when one of the judges got appointed to the appellate court in Second District Court of Appeal. Went with him. That was in Lakeland, Florida, in Tampa. Did that for about 1.5 years and realized that appellate law wasn't really for me, and jumped ship and went to in-house at one of the major car insurance companies as a in-house counsel, and did that for about close to 5 years before relocating here to Maine.
So when, first of all, love Stetson. Great campus, great area. I had several friends who went there, so. You know, I can hard to imagine you leaving that area, but I guess I understand that. So when you went in house in counsel, were you doing personal injury defense or more corporate work?
Yes, it was staff counsel, and it started off initially in a really niche area of law that I think might be exclusive to Florida.
Okay,
windshield litigation. It's a windshield litigation. So in Florida, the comprehensive insurance coverage provides essentially free windshield coverage if you get a crack or a chip or a broken windshield. And a lot of the insurance companies I worked for and other ones as well, they had some of their preferred providers, and they would get an invoice. There was dispute, you know, that portion of it or all of it or some of it or maybe some of it wasn't paid. A dispute would eventually arise on the contract, or at least the insurance policy, saying you didn't pay out what you were supposed to pay to the windshield company. So those windshield companies would file thousands of lawsuits throughout Florida, And that's what I was initially, it was all in small claims. And I was initially hired to kind of tackle those. I think I might have been the first staff counsel in Florida.
I've done this for a long time. I've never heard anybody talk about windshield law. So that's really, when you talk about niching down,
I hadn't heard of it. Yeah. And I think there's some recent legislation that's been tackling that. So I don't know what the future of that looks like.
Yeah. I wonder how that arose. What was the genesis for making that an issue in Florida? It's not like, I don't know. I can't even begin to think.
Well, Florida, some other states might have it, but Florida had mandatory attorney's fees if you prevailed on an insurance policy. So if you were a plaintiff and you prevailed, you automatically got attorney's fees. And I think that drove it partly. So I did that for a couple of years, and then I transitioned over into bodily injury, personal injury defense.
No, I guess what I was asking was, I wonder what is unique about Florida that would create an issue with the windshield. It's not like you have gravel lying around the roads all over the place.
Right, exactly. You don't have rocks. But yeah, I think a kind of a conflux of the two of a mandatory attorney's fee provision for the prevailing party plaintiff and comprehensive coverage. It was, like I said, a very niche area, but thousands upon thousands of lawsuits throughout the state of Florida. It was very interesting.
Yeah. Well, I guess it makes sense. I'm trying to recall my days when I did personal injury plaintiff's work, and I can't recall a windshield ever being an issue. People going through it, now that creates it. a crack or something like that. Anyway, so you moved up to Maine. You went from the Sunshine State to damn near the coldest place on earth. What prompted that?
My wife is, she's a New Hampshire native. I'm a Florida native. Like I said, we met in Tampa. We would keep, we would go up there, spend our, essentially any vacation time we had, going up to New England. Yeah. We visiting her family and just areas, parts of New England. And we really liked it. We said, why do we keep coming up here? Why don't we just kind of try to move up here? I didn't want to take another bar exam. So fortunately, Maine has a need for attorneys. And so they, about 5 years ago, 5-6 years ago now, they switched the admissions requirements. Essentially, any attorney practice law for, I think it was 5+ years, could motion onto the bar. So that's what I did. And Maine's closer to the coast. I like the ocean. I like, that's why how we end up, selecting Maine. But we moved up here 4.5 years ago and with our 3 children and absolutely love it.
Yeah. So it wasn't completely unfamiliar to you. And there was a rationale behind,
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It wasn't just like throwing a dart at the map and landing where we got, where that dart landed.
Yeah. Great. And so when you got to Maine, is that when you started into solo work, or were you still working in corporate business law at the time?
I had gotten, another job at a kind of a boutique law firm in Portland, and it was their business commercial litigation division, and did that for about a year and a half, 2 years roughly, maybe a year and a half. And then the pandemic hit. And during that time, working remotely, et cetera, I got recruited by a large femilaw firm in the United States that had just opened up or trying to expand into Maine. And I figured it was a good time to try to think kind of a different area of law. I had always enjoyed femilaw when I was working as a staff attorney at the circuit court in Tampa. For whatever reason, it just jived with me. It clicked. And my wife would always say, regardless of what other area of law I was working on, she would always mention, you really enjoyed femilaw. That kind of kept kind of a recurring theme. And so I took the job at the large femilaw firm, loved it. It just, like I said, it clicked with me, femilaw, for whatever reason. As I know a lot of attorneys kind of avoid it like the plague if they can.
Yeah. I think that when it comes to family law, there are two types of attorney. There are those who love it, and there are those who hate it. And I don't know of anybody who says, I kind of like it, or I kind of hate it. They're all either end of the spectrum, in my humble opinion. you know, having been a family law attorney, you know, there were parts of it that I very much enjoyed, particularly helping people who were in difficult situations, help them sort through the process and, you know, come out the other side with some dignity. But, you know, there are lots of challenges in that area. And those people who I find like family law, they like it to their core for whatever reason. And it sounds like that's kind of where you were at.
Yeah, because I think it's, you know, a situation, obviously people are, you know, divorce, for instance, ranks one of the highest kind of life experiences or traumatic life experiences up right on that scale, and helping people through that kind of difficult time. And that, you know, as you know, having done, you know, trial litigation and this kind of the adversarial process sometimes isn't the best area for family law. So that kind of throws that additional element onto it. And so I think, you know, combined, my approach has been, you know, helping people, seeing it as a process, it is what it is. And here's the way to, you know, in a divorce, for instance, untangling the financial aspect and carving out a path forward if you have children regarding what that cope is going to look like going forward. But definitely, you know, it is one of the areas that, as you know, it can be fraught with some emotion. And
oh, yeah.
Looking from the outside, you know, from the outside looking in, you know, trying to counsel clients, you know, my job is trying to take some of that stress away from you, because nobody sits there, you know, doesn't wake up and say, I want to hire a family law attorney. And two, I want to go participate in this court process. But yeah, like I said, for whatever reason, it just really clicked. And, you know, I worked there for almost 3 years up until, you know, the end of May of this year, when I decided that it was either now or never if I was going to take the plunge into opening my own practice.
Yeah, well, let's we'll get into that in just a second. I want to just kind of complete the loop here. And one of the things that I think is attractive about family law to a lot of people is the ability to be a little bit creative. It's not quite as cut and dry as, you know, I found personal injury to be pretty cut and dry.
Right.
You know, that it was all based on the evidence and the deposition and the testimony, and there wasn't really a lot of room to impart, you know, some of your other skills, soft personal skills, for instance, which I felt that I had. And right. Family law, I think, does give you that opportunity, particularly if you're good at diffusing, as you said, emotional decisions or helping to guide people through difficult challenges. If you're good at that, then you can really kind of flex a little bit in family law. And it can be very rewarding.
Right. Yeah. It's crafting the solutions. I think you hit the nail on the head, as, you know, obviously having done, you know, trial attorney work, like you said, you know, personal injury, it's very straightforward. Here's the evidence, you know, put it in front of a jury and see what happens. Family law, at least here in Maine, it's decided by a judge if the issues don't get resolved, but being able to go either through mediation or simply through negotiation with the other side to try to craft a resolution that works for everybody, because it is trying to figure out, you know, people have all of this kind of, they're intertwined, whether it's their finances or, you know, clearly parents are going to love their children equally. How do we figure out something might work out for them? And it can be extremely creative, and no two cases are alike in family law. I mean, really each case is fact specific. I know it sounds kind of cliche, but it really is, because each case involves two individuals or more that they're all unique themselves. And so they're going to have their own wants and needs.
And every family has a story.
Right, right.
You know, and that needs to be reflected in the solution, I think.
Yeah.
The best solutions are the ones that take that into account. And you have things like collaborative law and right. mediation, which are all focused on resolving the issue. And I oftentimes felt with personal injury that it was more lip service, that we didn't really try and craft a non-litigated, you know, solution, which just was a box we had to check off to get to court. And then, you know, in front of a jury, it was always a total crapshoot. You know, sometimes you could have the best case and lose, and sometimes a shaky case and win. And that just drove me nuts.
Well, and there was, so, and even like, if, yeah, having done personal injury, when you go to mediation, and I would go into some, a lot of mediations a lot of times, like there's no way that this case is going to settle. This one is going to go to trial.
Yeah.
In that case, we get resolved at mediation. And then there were cases where like this case is totally going to get settled at mediation or prior to trial. And lo and behold, get set for trial. And there you go. It was no rhyme or reason to that. And so I think
it didn't seem to be, you know, to me.
Right.
Oftentimes. And, but anyway, we'll move on from that. That's just me whining about, you know, my past experiences. So you decided to make the leap. Okay. What you said is now or never. I know that feeling. When I made a decision to go solo, it was a now or never kind of scenario as well. What did you do to prepare for that?
So for one, obviously I listen to a lot of podcasts and I've been listening to your podcast for years. And you know, to me, it's, I think your explanation of like, they never taught us this in law school. And I think, you know, several, not numerous times throughout the podcasts, you have talked about, you know, we do have skill set. I mean, we are trained as attorney. You go through law school, you know, the material, you have everything you need to do, but they just never teach us how to put it into practice.
No, never did.
And in law school, I'd always had this, you know, when I envisioned myself as being an attorney, it was kind of running my own thing and whatnot. But you kind of fall into that kind of the cookie cutter mold of, here's what you do. You need to do this. You know, go with a clerk as a staff attorney or work for a big law firm or whatever and kind of pay your dues until you get out. And, you know, I, for better or for worse, obviously when I was coming out of law school, the recession hit and, you know, job offers were being rescinded. And so it was kind of a scramble to land wherever you could land, but it kept nagging at me. And once I kind of found family law, having worked for that, you know, for the large firm here and realizing this is really what I was passionate about, I think that kind of resurfaced. And I had continued to listen to your podcast and recommendations. A year before I even jumped, I, you know, scheduled an appointment with Clio to take a look at how that works, wrap my mind around it. And I would, you know, take notes as to when you had guests on talking about different tools, whether you can use Apple versus PC, things like that. But ultimately, I was in a position where, you know, I'm getting close to my mid-40s and I had, a book of business. I had clients where I could ultimately, if I decided I wanted to leap, obviously they'd be given an opportunity if my clients wanted to remain with the firm. That was their choice. But I knew that if I went on my own, even if I didn't have any clients, I could do it. And I had that kind of confidence. And then I think the big impetus was my wife in my corner basically saying, you can do it. You definitely can do it.
Count that as a real blessing.
Right. And I do every day.
Because that's not always the case. You know, no. A lot of spouses, male or female, like, what the hell are you doing?
Right.
We got three kids.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So that's
got
also very kind of you to mention that this podcast was at least some source of inspiration and preparation for the leap. We hope that that's the case. That's why we're still doing what we're doing here.
Right.
And it is getting better. Some law schools now are at least paying some attention to the notion that, look, half your graduates are likely going to be in solo or small firms.
Exactly.
Because the opportunity or the desire to go to larger firms or in-house counsel and all that, it's not as viable an option. That herd mentality is not consistent with reality today. And so some law schools are doing a better job of that. Some bar associations are doing a better job of recognizing that. I still think we have a long way to go in terms educating attorneys and prepping them for solo practice. And I think me personally, while I'm on this soapbox a little bit, I think the area that needs to be exploited a little more is private mentorship.
Yeah.
I'd like to see solo and small firms take on the responsibility of mentoring new attorneys, understanding that they're going to go start their own practice, not stay with you. And that's kind of the way it was done way back in the day. know, you apprenticed with an attorney and then you sat for the bar. And I think if we can get back to that a little bit, I think access to justice would be improved and reputation of attorneys would be improved and the stress level would be reduced. And that's my soapbox pitch for the day.
And I agree. I agree.
Support for today's episode comes from Ruby, the number one client communication solution for growing legal practices. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Ruby creates exceptional experiences for your callers and website visitors. They take messages, screen and transfer callers, schedule appointments, perform new client intake, confirm details with outbound calls, and can answer in English and Spanish, and a whole lot more. Just like an in-house receptionist, only better, because they turn every ring into a relationship. Ruby can work full-time, part-time, or as a backup, and you can change your instructions anytime with their top-rated mobile app and online dashboard. Plus, Ruby integrates with tools such as Clio, Lexaclara, MyCase, and Rocket Matter. It all adds up to more opportunities and more time saved. In fact, 90% of legal professionals who use Ruby capture more billable hours than the national average, with many recording double or more. That's 5 or more billable hours per day. To experience the Ruby difference for yourself, visit get.ruby.com/ELE. That's get.ruby.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, for up to $150 off your first month. Imagine you, powered by Ruby. As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Kimmler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top line revenue to bottom line profit. His two game-changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions, and the action plan, so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to go.oncehub, that's O-N-C-E-H-U-B, go.oncehub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I've been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client. And I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor, you know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimmler at netprofit.com. So let's talk about, so you get started here, okay, with the wife's blessing. Did you go right into a commercial setting, or did you work from the kitchen table, or how did you initially set up your practice?
I think a big component to it would be, I think technology has been has leveled the playing field immensely. I don't know how easy it would have been for me to do this, you know, when I came out of law school. I don't think, without a large, you know, war chest, so to speak, of startup costs and whatnot, I at the time, I don't think it really would have been fiscally possibly for me to do at the time. But I was able to get a it's a shared office space type, you know, an office suite, executive suite type mm-hmm. thing. I you know, for $300 a month, I have my office. Perfect. I outfitted it with, you know, everything, at, you know, printers, things like that. And for me, the big thing was practice management software to keep track of everything. And that's how I
went with Clio.
I did go with Clio. I find it extremely useful. I know there's other practice management software that fit, you know, potentially other people's needs, but it just, you know, clicked for me. It was most similar to the practice management software I was using at my other firm. And so it was really kind of just really easy transition into that aspect of it. And, you know, obviously still solo right now, just recently started using, you know, a call in answering service, which I have found it is awesome and amazing just because it does kind of free up some of the time that you would take answering your phones.
Sure. Who are you using?
I'm using Posh Virtual Assistant. Yep. And I remember years ago, there was an attorney in Sarasota that he and I were talking, and he extolled Ruby Perceptionist. He said, it was, as soon as you can get an answering service, do that. It's been, I know there's kind of obviously options out there now as well, but now I take that advice as having been some sage advice in the beginning.
Yeah, everybody who knows me knows I'm totally in the tank for Ruby, and they are a sponsor of the podcast, which we are greatly appreciative of. And then they have, they have competition, and they've gone through change, and they frankly have lost some of their client base. They're working hard to recover it. But they've always been great for me. But there was a woman who, and I've told the story before, she led this solo and small firm practice area of the Maryland State Bar Association. I had her on a podcast. She was like, I think she was episode 3. Name is Pat Yevics. And she said, here's the 3 things that a solo must have. And the first thing she named was an answering service.
Right.
And the second was a bookkeeper, and the third was a housekeeper.
Yeah.
And I thought all 3 of those were really prescient advice. And I've stayed with that. So, but like I said, there are options, and listen, I don't really think it matters who you use if you're happy with them and you're and they're serving your needs. It makes so much more sense than answering your own phone, because for all the obvious reasons, I don't think we even have to go into to what they are. So, are you billing out of Clio as well?
Yes, I am billing out of Clio. Like I said, it mirrors most closely the practice management software I was using previously, and I just find it kind of intuitive as to things I need it to do, and that's how I essentially run my practice, using kind of all the functions and that they have to offer, and I've obviously coupling it with some of the Clio Grow aspect of it, which allows to keep track of leads and probably could speak solely just on that for a long time, but it does offer their kind of package or their suite of products helps me, keep everything track of everything, and knowing where I'm at in my clients' files. I find it, easy for me to, to send out invoices.
Yeah. Are you integrating it with any other platforms that the firm uses?
Right now I have, so the Posh integrates with that. Obviously it also works with my Microsoft Office. So like, for instance, Outlook, I can store all my emails right from Outlook. And its suite of products is, I think their list is, I think, in the hundreds potentially of apps and products that they kind of speak with. And so I'm looking forward to that. Admittedly, I'm not the most tech savvy person. And so the easiest plug and play thing for me is probably one of the best product for me. So.
Well, I think that's one of Clio's strengths. And again, just to be clear, lots of other practice management platforms have similar integration capabilities. I mean, Practice Panther, I think, is one of the best in terms of having integration facilities with other software packages. But Clio has, their suite is in the hundreds, if not, a couple thousand apps that you can connect with. I connected with my QuickBooks and, keeps, because I use QuickBooks for accounting purposes, and it seamlessly integrates there. It also integrates with, I do estate planning, and I use a platform called Integrative Legal Services, ILS, and it integrates with them. So I enter the data once. Normally in Clio Grow, and then it migrates to Clio Manage when they become a client. Once it gets into Manage, it's spread out to QuickBooks and to ILS, and it saves me an enormous amount of time that I would have otherwise had to offload to a paralegal,
right? Somebody else to do that same work that you only have to do once.
What's the biggest challenge for you these days in family law? I'm going to tell you what it was for me. It was discovery.
I would say Maine is a little bit different from my experiences in Florida. In the family law, and then obviously personal injury litigation, discovery was huge. I mean, we would take depositions, requests for admissions, requests for production of documents, and everything was on the table in family law, especially. All those tools were at your dispense. In Maine, it's limited to financial discovery only, and without, you can get permission from the court to seek non-financial. So if you wanted to explore a person's, a party's medical records or something like that, you need good cause to the court. And so it's really limited to...
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it does make it possible, obviously, you don't have tons of paperwork, but most cases, I'll still send out the financial discovery, but a lot of it's, the same thing. And, and quite frankly, a lot of people just don't have, a plethora of assets. It's not, most of them aren't a Jeff Bezos situation. And right. So it's, maybe they have their house. And I would, to touch on your point about the most difficult thing right now is the housing issue. A lot of times if somebody, if you're going through a divorce and somebody wants to keep the home that's marital property, the options are to buy that person out of their equity. You could do that through refinancing or you sell the home. The interest rates are so high, the housing prices are so high that it's almost become cost prohibitive for people if they're going through a divorce to keep that house because a refinance is off the table. Whereas in years ago, it could have just been a couple thousand dollars potentially for a refinance, and that was, you're on your way. But so that's been the housing issue as to what people do after divorce, during divorce. It's been compounded by the current economics of the housing issues.
What's the housing availability like in and around where you work? Is there a lot on the market, or is the market kind of scarce at the same time? Interest rates high.
Yeah, extremely scarce. That's just the bottom line. There's just not enough inventory out there for the number of buyers. It really picked up during clearly the pandemic, people moving north out of Boston, out of New York City, and it hasn't slowed down. And, because now we can do everything remotely, and they can't keep up with the demand.
Yeah, you couple that with high interest rates, and it's a recipe for difficulty in division of marital property. It just makes it much more challenging. Yeah. So what do you see ahead for you in terms of staffing, in terms of growth, or do you have a sense that you want to expand, or are you feeling comfortable as a lone ranger and you're going to ride that as long as you can?
I definitely would like to see. So one area I'm looking at is potentially virtual assistants, or a virtual assistant, or a part-time paralegal. Eventually, maybe expanding to an associate. I am also licensed to practice in New Hampshire. I'm currently 10 minutes from the border. I have clients in New Hampshire, a handful. I intentionally didn't jump out going to two states at once. I focused on the area that I was in. Would like to kind of expand to that. So I think ideally having an associate or two underneath me, it's kind of my vision. I obviously don't want to become a big law, but the technology has really allowed and afforded me the ability to run a practice almost at the same level, I was at, or I have seen others at with multiple staff members. And so that's kind of an area I'm trying to just kind of balance to see what makes it easier for me as far as practice wise and what makes the most sense. But definitely now looking into that, the kind of the virtual assistant, and see how that might be able to help my practice.
Yeah, I think that's the logical step for you. It has been, or was for me and for many others. The opportunities for virtual assistants, whether they be virtual admins or virtual paralegals or even virtual associates, has never been greater and easier to implement. So I think that's obviously the next step for you, if that's the way you decide to go. I'll just put a plug in here again for Get Staffed Up. It's a company run by some attorneys in Florida. It's where I get my virtual assistant from. They're all offshore, highly vetted, highly trained and skilled, and very affordable. So for those who are listening and in the same boat as Jason is, I would always recommend Get Staffed Up and do please mention the Law Entrepreneur. All right. So it sounds like things are moving along. What can you think of a mistake that you made that you wish you had done differently? I know our listeners often kind of like to learn, what did you do wrong? Something must have gone wrong for you. Does anything come to mind?
I did try to maintain I was practicing in Portland, and I was trying to maintain an office space there, but it was, again, more of a kind of an office, like a virtual office scenario where I can use conference and things like that. I did that obviously for continuity purposes potentially, and to see, hey, where's most of my clients going to be coming out of? But now up where I'm at, coupled with, you know, some of the marketing I've been doing, I would say I did need that space because most of my clients in there. So that's something that, you know, I guess planning wise would just, hey, stick with where my area was at and kind of grow outwards.
I've found once I niched down geographically, my practice, you know, expanded geometrically. So I think that's wise advice. We haven't talked about marketing. Griffin, what are you doing to get new clients?
So initially I was starting off with, you know, doing some Facebook ads, saying, I thought that would be a good area. And I think, can I kind of get the name out? That helps.
Yeah.
The thing that I've seen the biggest, I can't extol it enough, is the Google ads, Google local service ads. It's
okay.
That itself, I wish that if I was going to go back again, you know, 5 months ago, but I might not have been in a position to, but doing that would have been, to me, that's the, you know, the best thing that's happening right now, marketing wise.
So that's working for you.
Yeah, it's doing great. And then obviously, you know, just participating in networking events. That's the freedom I've found as being on my own. I can pick and choose where I want to go. You know, I don't have a firm telling me go to this event. I can say I think I'll get something out of this practice wise and networking wise. I'm going to go here. And those have paid off with simple, you know, referrals between law firms, you know, people referring clients to me and vice versa. And so again, I would say to anybody jumping out, that's the thing to focus on as well.
Awesome. Well, Jason, it's been a delight having you with us today. What's the best way our audience can reach out to you, congratulate you, or follow up with you on anything you had to offer?
Yeah, so they can find me on Facebook at Drigo Divorce. I'm also on LinkedIn, you know, Jason Rice. Search me an attorney, you'll find Drigo Divorce. You can also find my website, Drigo-divorce.com, or email me at jrice@drigo-divorce.com. I'm more than happy to talk and give advice. If I'm talking to myself years ago, I would say I should have done this sooner. So anybody in that same position, you can definitely do it.
Terrific. Well, we'll have all of that in our show notes. And again, I want to thank you, for your kind words about this podcast being a source of inspiration for you to go out on your own, and wish you much success in the future. And I hope things continue to go well.
Thank you so much, Neil. I appreciate it.
Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them. And I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.